from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about a new study on the economic impact of the arts in Indianapolis.
And I'll get a preview of this year's Indianapolis City Ballet's Evening with the Stars.
I'll find out what's new with this year's Hoosier Salon, and we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Every 5 years, the national advocacy organization, Americans for the Arts, tours the country partnering with local arts councils and not-for-profit arts organizations to ascertain the economic impact of local arts. The most recent study was completed in 2010, and Americans for the Arts took a couple years to carefully study the data to learn what's going on in our cities. Randy Cohen, Americans for the Arts Vice President of Research and Policy, recently came to Indianapolis to tell a packed room of more than 100 arts and culture employees about the new study. And Sharon Gamble invited him to tell us more.
Randy, you and your wife recently were thinking about going out for an evening, and I want you to tell that story. Not that it's a dramatic story, but it is illustrative of what we're about to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, number one, you'd think for a guy with Americans for the Arts on his business card, I'm going to the arts all the time, but I have as much trouble getting out the door as the next guy with kids and family and work and everything. But it was date night with my wife, and we were trying to figure out, what the plan was in advance of that. And so we decided we were going to go out and see an arts event. In planning the date night, we went online and cruised some different websites and looked at some dance and theater performances and settled on a theater event. We bought our tickets right there online using a credit card. And when the night came, you know, we got out, we dressed up and went to dinner first and had a nice dinner and then drove to the theater and we parked in the parking garage and, that cost $10 and went into the theater itself and it was beautiful and we shared a glass of wine and used the facilities before we went into the auditorium, and it was a beautiful auditorium with these wonderful chandeliers, and we sat there looking at the program and about what we were reading about what we were about to see. And if you think about everything that happened leading up to that point, it's an interesting illustration of how the arts affect so many different industries in our community. So just think at the very beginning. Well, you know, we went online. We were looking at websites. Well, web developers, web designers do a lot of business with arts organizations. It's a huge marketing business. We bought our tickets online using a credit card. And so there's your finance people and your banker people and went out to a nice restaurant. We spent about $60. And, you know, the owner of that restaurant uses, some of those dollars for their personal income. They pay a waiter. They purchase all their produce within 100 miles. That's kind of their handle. So all kinds of businesses related to the restaurant business benefited. And then we went, we parked at the garage, right? So we paid $10 and somebody owns that parking garage and they pay the parking attendant that gave us the little ticket. And then, we got into the theater itself and, hey, everybody needs a good plumber, right? You know, whether you run a theater or whether you, it's just at your house. And, the electrician that hangs and lights those beautiful chandeliers, and even the designers and printers of the program itself. All of these industries affected, and this is before the curtain even went up.
And that's not even getting into the overhead of stuff like somebody built the building that houses the theater company. You probably put gas in your car in order to get to the theater. You mentioned kids. You probably paid a babysitter before or after this evening.
Yes, which doubles the cost of the evening,
I think
is the real racket in all this spending. Yeah. So, absolutely. And when we go out to an arts event in Indianapolis. It's interesting what our research study shows. The typical attendee to an arts event spends $28.38 per person per event, not including the cost of admission, on all of these event-related spending. So, you know, the meals, the parking, maybe you go out for dessert or drinks after the show, you know, you come home, you pay the babysitter. Lots of economic activity related to that arts event. And again, $28.38, that's not even including the ticket cost.
Without the ticket. And that's a local. That's not somebody coming over, coming up from Cincinnati or down from Chicago or over from Columbus, Ohio. That's a local.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, with the research study that we did and, you know, with the economists that we used to design this study and conduct in Indianapolis, we found out of the 6.7 million arts attendees in 2010, 45% are actually non-local attendees, so they live outside of Marion County. And when you look at the non-local spending, that per person expenditure jumps up to $33.41. So it's just to show arts and culture, you know, is drawing people into the community, and those folks are spending money.
Absolutely. Hey, for the statistics geeks, scientists, mathematicians in our universe, this Arts and Economic Impact Survey has been done every 5 years since...
Since 1994. So this is our fourth national study. Indianapolis was one of 182 study regions across the country. We were in all 50 states plus D.C. You know, we had communities as small as 1,600 people all the way up to 4 million. And what the data show pretty clearly is that arts are food for the soul. Arts help build the communities that we want to live in. But they're also a business, an industry that supports jobs, generates government revenue, and is good for local merchants.
And about how many arts organizations did you sample to push these surveys out to their audiences and their publics?
What we did is we surveyed 120 nonprofit arts and culture organizations in Indianapolis. And it was just the nonprofits. You know, it was your theaters, your museums, your arts education organizations. We didn't include, you know, the motion pictures where Spider-Man or the Dark Knight's playing, or individual artists or the for-profit galleries, all of which are, of course, hugely important component of the whole cultural ecology in Indianapolis, but just not part of this study. Well, we gathered data from 60 of those organizations, and that's what we went with. We don't make estimates for non-respondents. What we found is if you look at those 60 organizations and all that audience spending, the arts are a $384 million industry in Indianapolis, $384 million of spending annually. And $193 million of that is just the arts organization expenditures by themselves. And that's a mythbuster for a lot of folks. Again, we all love that, you know, there's that great museum and there's the great theater community and the visual and performing arts. You know, that's just what helps make Indianapolis the great city that it is. But the fact is they're also businesses. They employ people in the community. They purchase goods and services locally. Arts organizations are good business citizens. And that's a surprise to a lot of folks. We just don't think of the arts that way.
And speaking of those employed people, what is the number of full-time equivalent jobs?
So if you look at all of that spending by the arts organizations and their audiences, that supports 13,136 jobs in Indianapolis. And remember, those jobs aren't just at the arts organizations. Those are the ones we talked about earlier, the computer programmer, the caterer, the restaurant. So these are jobs across the city, 13,136. So this is a good news story for Indianapolis.
Absolutely. Now, I want you to put something in context for me, because this program has been on the air 13, almost 14 years, and folks might remember our conversation about the 2005 survey, remembering that that was before the last three recessions. So the numbers are a little changed. Your 2010 survey that you're talking about is...
Yeah.
Yeah. A little changed from 2005.
Right. And so, yeah, if we listened to this radio story 5 years ago, we talked about the arts being a $469 million industry, not $384 million. And first thing you might think is, oh, boy, you know, this is... You know, this is what's going on? What's happening to the arts in our community? Well, yeah, there was that little thing called the Great Recession in between the two studies, and the years we studied were 2010, so not the strongest economic years in our nation's economy.
Right.
But what we actually found is that spending by the arts organizations themselves grew slightly between those two studies. So organization spending went up from 182 to $193 million in annual expenditures. So where we saw the big drop was in the audience spending, that event-related spending. And actually, the Indianapolis figures completely mirror what was happening nationally. People were staying home more, spending less, traveling less. And so the number of audiences stayed pretty flat, actually. It was about 6.7 million then and 6.7 million this time. Hmm. But what we saw were the attendees spending less on meals and that type of thing. And I think, you know, people were going to the arts, but unemployment was higher, home foreclosures were up. Folks are, well, we're going to go see the theater, but maybe we'll have dinner at home first.
Sure.
Instead of go out, or we'll go to a less expensive restaurant. So the organizations themselves actually showed great resilience, great durability, and as you'd expect in a down economy, is the audience spending is really where we saw the decrease.
And there's, you know, in a bad economy, holding steady is not a bad outcome.
Yes, we sometimes say flat is the new increase, you know, and 10% decrease is the new flat, you know. Yeah, you know, so the arts, we saw a lot of growth through the 2000s, but there was a pretty big scraping sound during the recession. And, you know, if we saw anything else, we'd probably start to wonder about the data because, you know, this was a very severe economic downturn, and we're still incrementally, inching our way out of it. But, you know, the arts show that they're more durable than the economic cycles in this country and certainly in Indianapolis. And that just shows that they're supported locally and people are going to find a way to get to the arts, that there's, an appreciation for the arts as a fundamental part of the community.
What would you do if you were John Q. art mm-hmm. consumer in Indianapolis with this information?
Well, one thing to do is contact your local legislators and your state legislators and remind them that the arts are important not just to our quality of life but to the economy, and remind them that you vote. And just to tell the story about why the arts are important to you. So take some kind of action. And so there's a great message to be told here, a great story about why the arts are important, not just culturally, but also economically. It's important to understand that arts organizations, nonprofit arts organizations, depend on contributed support from the public and private sectors to go with that earned income, the ticket sales, the sponsorships, the advertising. So government funding has a huge role in making sure the arts are accessible to the entire community. And so if you want to maintain this culturally vibrant community, you got to do something. We've got a strong industry there in Indianapolis. The government support is held its own. It could be a little higher compared to other larger cities, you know, if you were doing some comparisons. But we can't assume that that's just going to be that way. You know, we got to stay active. You got to contact a city council person, a county council person, you know, your state legislator, and remind them that you participate in the arts, that the arts are important, and that you are expecting them to make ensure an annual government appropriation to the arts.
Single voices matter.
Yes, they sure do. You know, how do you build a movement? You know, one person at a time, and it really does matter. And you know, governments across the country are facing, you know, a challenging time, challenging economy, and No pushback is the low-hanging fruit, at budget appropriations time. But I think this study lays to rest a common misperception that the arts are a luxury that we can afford to support during prosperous times, but are hard to justify when the economy is struggling.
Sharon Gamble with Randy Cohen, Americans for the Arts Vice President of Research and Policy. You can learn more at either artscouncilofindianapolis.org or visit americansforthearts.org. Again, artscouncilofindianapolis.org or americansforthearts.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Once again, the Indianapolis City Ballet's Evening with the Stars will bring the top ballet stars from around the world to our city for one night of performances featuring signature works from both classical and contemporary ballet. Our own dancer, Travis DiNicola, spoke with Kevin Hess, the ballet's producer and executive director, and Ellie Baker, their director of marketing, about the show.
Ellie, Kevin, welcome back. It's great to see you both again.
Thank you,
Travis. You too.
I am once again so excited. You know, I this is my favorite night of the year. I love the Evening with the Stars that you put on. What, are we at the fourth year or fifth year now? What is this?
This is year number four for us.
This is four. Okay.
We're very excited.
It just gets better and better every year. And you know, people ask me about it, and you know, how do you describe it other than some of the best ballet dancers in the world coming to Indianapolis for one night? And we are so lucky that you guys put this on.
We try and bring together, a group of again, the most exciting, and we're gearing toward contemporary also. So it's really an unusual event in that you not only see the great classics with all that drama, with all that vibrance in it, but you also get, the latest works in contemporary ballet.
It's a great, great mix, and that's the exciting thing. I mean, seeing a lot of different styles, dancers from New York, dancers from Europe, from Russia, as you mentioned, contemporary and classical. So let's talk a bit about some of the things that are going on this year. I want to start with what your program is starting with this year, which is a very young dancer from Indianapolis that you're opening the show with. Tell me about how this happened, and because I think it'll also give some insight into the work that you guys have been doing.
We met a girl named Dimitra Berevescos at a master class. We do a master class program about a year and a half ago. And she was spotted by the teacher at the master class and of course, scholarshiped into her school in New York. So Dimitra is an Indianapolis girl, and she travels every other weekend to New York for coaching and classes. And she was on our Young Stars program last September.
Right, and that was the evening before the Evening with the Stars. The Young Stars featured, I mean, literally hundreds of Young Stars of ballet. So she was part of that group.
She was part of that group, and we've had our eye on her since we saw her, along with so many of the dancers here in Indianapolis. There's some real talent here, and we get the privilege of seeing them through the masterclass program as they come through and experience new things.
That's really exciting.
Having Dimitra on the program, she'll open the program. She's 12 years old, and she's fearless.
So what's the piece that she's doing?
She'll do a classical variation from Esmeralda.
Okay.
And very nice. I mean, she's just working on it right now in New York.
So 12 years old. Before we went on the air, you told me something because I was asking, like, you know, how does she deal with it? And you told me what she thinks about before she goes on stage. Tell me that again.
It was funny. We just had this conversation the other day, and she's absolutely fearless. So, and for somebody at age 12 to have that steely look in her eyes when she gets and the curtain goes up and she's on, and it's just amazing. And I said, so how do you do that? And she said, I just think of happy thoughts.
I cannot wait to see her. That's going to be a lot of fun. And it's great that you guys are featuring Indiana and Indianapolis talent as well as the international talent you bring in. Something else that you're doing, which I think is terrific, is really paying tribute to one of Indiana's greatest composers, Cole Porter, one of my favorites. And you've had some Cole Porter. There was a piece with Cole Porter before you've done. This is a larger suite that's been created. Tell me about this.
We've been very privileged to make the acquaintance of Mag Russell, who is Cole Porter's niece, and she's here. She's a supporter of the ballet now. And she's the one who encouraged us the first time, 2 years ago, to create Night and Day. And so that was sort of the launching point for this new Cole Porter suite. It's called This Thing Called Love. It'll be choreographed again by Margot Sappington.
Okay.
It has eight dancers, including dancers from American Ballet Theater, the Royal Ballet, and a few students, actually.
Well, so tell me about the process for this. So Margot Sappington's the choreographer. She's mm-hmm. working out of New York, is that correct?
She's working in New York right now, yes.
So how does that work with getting these dancers from different countries, different companies, together to choreograph a piece like that?
That's a very good question. Not so easy to answer.
I mean, is it like the first time they really all see each other together, like the night before or something, that they perform
we've got
it?
Most of them. We're actually going to do a few nights of rehearsals here before the performance, and that's when the finale of the piece will all come together. That's when we can get them all together for the next time. We did have them all together for a couple of days in the beginning of August.
Okay. And this is pretty unusual it's unusual anyway to have dancers from different companies sharing a stage for an evening of performance, a sampler, if you will, but to actually have dancers from different companies in the same piece. Really unusual.
They really love that. Because they see each other in these sort of gala performances, but they don't dance with each other. And it's a great opportunity. The dancers just love it. And it provides a real dynamic as the different styles. You can see those contrasts, but there's a mm-hmm. there's a competitive nature, and there's a very warm collegial nature
The
same time. And so the piece really takes on its own vibrance, its own energy. And this with the Cole Porter music, it's got it's romantic and it's exciting. She's added some acrobatic sort of elements to it. So it's in five Cole Porter songs. It plays with very nicely with romance and love.
What are some of the songs?
I know they do This Thing Called Love.
Okay.
Night and Day. Mm-hmm. De Lovely.
It's a fun night because something like this is almost, you could almost compare it to like an all-star game for, you know, basketball or football or baseball or something like that, where, as you mentioned, you know, they're competitive, but then once they actually see each other on the stage, they're all very collegial at the same time and, you know, finally get an opportunity to work together.
Ballet is it is competitive, and ballet people don't like to say it's competitive, but it's very collegially competitive. There's no score. There's no winner. So it's really about the nicest business that has that competitive aspect, of course.
Tell me a bit about Brooklyn Mac, who's coming this year, new this year, correct?
He's new for us this year. Mm-hmm. He's been all over the place.
Yeah.
Amazing dancer. We spotted him a few years ago in the Youth America Grand Prix. And this year he's just finished. He's actually a principal dancer with the Washington Ballet.
Okay.
And He's just wrapped up the Boston International Ballet Competition. He won the Grand Prix, the gold medal, as well as Istanbul and Varna. Varna's probably the most prestigious, or at least one of the most prestigious competitions. He did all that in the last 4 weeks, I think.
And this is a guy who, if I read right, he started out taking ballet to help him with his football.
He's an African American gentleman from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And at age 12, as a way to help his football prospects.
That's great.
Started in ballet and he didn't go back to football.
And obviously he's got some skills.
An amazing leap, a turn. It's just breathtaking.
So we've got you mentioned, of course, Washington Ballet, represented by Brooklyn Mac, New York City Ballet, American Ballet Theater, the Royal Ballet, Birmingham Royal Ballet, and then also Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo.
Paul Gislain again from the Trocs will come back. That was we try and bring back one of the crowd favorites, and he knows how to milk the crowd, and it was really a lot of fun.
Entertaining.
People were surprised. Wendy Whalen from New York City Ballet is the senior member. I hate to say that of our troupe. She's just mm-hmm. an amazing, amazing dancer. She's the one you've seen.
She's a principal.
She's a principal at New York City Ballet. The pieces two of the favorites that we've shown have been from Yuan Yuan Tan doing Distant Cries from Edward Liang and After the Rain last year from Chris Wheeldon. Those two pieces were created on Wendy.
Oh, wow.
She's really the muse of some of the greatest contemporary choreographers.
That's so exciting. And what a great opportunity for local dancers. I think one of the coolest things about the Evening with the Stars is the balcony at the Marat is almost completely filled with young ballet dancers. And to me, that's one of it's the coolest things because they're cheering and they're hooting and hollering. And these are young girls, you know, 10, 12, 15, 18, whatever, that, you know, for many of them, this is, you know, like their chance to see their heroes.
Absolutely. And to even get a better up-close and personal view of all these heroes, we have the masterclass series, and Wendy will be teaching our first masterclass the day after the Evening with the Stars performance, so really up close and personal.
What a great opportunity. I mean, and what excites me about Evening with the Stars is an Indianapolis City Ballet. I mean, even though, you know, there is not yet a permanent Indianapolis City Ballet company, the impact that this organization has already had on the arts, and especially on dancers in the city, is phenomenal, I really think.
The Masterclass series has really brought together the dance community in Indianapolis within the 65 dance schools that are within Marion County. We've been able to place a masterclass on all sides of the city.
65 schools in Marion County. I mean, that alone
yep.
is pretty exciting.
There's so much
support for dance in this city.
There's a great future for dance in this city. There's an ongoing interest. I mean, that's the only reason we're here. That's the only reason we see a vibrant future, because there is such a following. There remains. Most little girls' dream is to be a ballerina still.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, support for dance in the city seems a little quiet, but I love that you guys are shouting it. You know?
There seems no other way. We're very fortunate to have the support of the Fortune family, the Tobiases, the Lechleiters, and the CICF, the Clarinoise Fund. So they're really instrumental, along with the Clues Foundation, the Alan Whitehill Clues Foundation. Without their support, we would not be here today.
So quickly, tell me about some future plans. What's on the horizon for Indianapolis City Ballet?
Well, we've got a whole year of master classes we'll be announcing next week. That'll be opening up. We're working with WFYI Television, actually, for a broadcast this November of last September's Young Stars of Ballet.
Oh, terrific.
We're very excited about that. And then to begin to build, again, a different sort of program, to continue the Evening with the Stars, to build a sort of repertory program that we can bring in, and another Young Stars of Ballet, but as a separate, standalone event.
Okay.
So that people don't have to choose one or the other. They can go to one in the spring and one in the fall.
So, and this year, again, just to remind people, Indianapolis City Ballet. I'm sitting here with Ellie Baker and Kevin Hess. Evening with the Stars takes place on Saturday, September 8th at 8 p.m. at the Murat Center at the Old National, Murat Theater at the Old National Center. Ellie, how do people get information, get tickets?
If they'd like to purchase patron tickets, they're available through our website at www.indianapoliscityballet.org, or they can, for general reserve seating tickets, www.livenation.com, or call 800-745-3000, or they can visit the box office at 502 North New Jersey Street.
And Kevin, I'm going to put you on the spot here real quick. If there's one dancer you think that's just going to wow Indianapolis audiences, surprise them this year, who's it going to be?
Brooklyn Mack. Yeah.
Really looking forward to that
piece.
Absolutely. That sounds like a lot of fun. And how young is this man now?
Brooklyn has just turned 25.
Okay.
He's going to be off the competition circuit. I think that's pretty much the deadline. So
excellent.
You'll see him on the gala circuit, and you can see him at the Washington Ballet.
Looking forward to seeing him here in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis City Ballet's Kevin Hess and Ellie Baker. The 2012 Evening with the Stars takes place on Saturday, September 8th at 8 p.m. at the Murat. More information is available at indianapoliscityballet.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Turn around. I need to see the end of your ponytail very quickly.
Sure. What you checking out there?
Well, I think it's a little singed. You were pretty close to those fire jugglers on the street the other night at the Fringe, weren't you?
Oh, I don't think it's singed. It's fringed.
It's fringed.
There you go. That's what's going on.
And we'll have some events from the Indie Fringe Festival, easy for me to say, and much more on our calendar we call What Do We Do?
That's right. We are in full throttle Fringe right now.
Mm-hmm.
336 shows, 10 days, and it just started, $10 maximum ticket price. So I wanted to just pick out a couple. And as we're recording this, I've not had a chance to see any yet. I'm going to see some this weekend, of course. But,
fabulous.
But I did want to mention that Blue Monkey Sideshow is having their Fringe show, which is going to be very fun, because they really haven't done Fringe stuff before, even though they certainly are on
they
the
are
Fringe.
Very fringy.
If you're looking for a really terrific magic show that's great for all ages, Trig Watson, I've seen him perform a couple times before. He's doing a show called Just Amazing. And, of course, Taylor Martin is back with a new show. his Illusionist History, The History of Mystery, sort of a history of magic that should be a lot of fun. It's great to have Taylor back. I think this is, he's been in every one, so this is the 8th time he's performed.
Wow.
So those are just a couple fun ones that I'm throwing out there. Is anything you've been checking
Fantastic.
Out?
Fantastic. Well, I got to see Going, Going, Gone, which is a lot of fun. Our listeners heard about that a few weeks
Lou
ago.
Lou Harry and John Thomas
and some great actors, forced to be great improv artists as well. I also want to point out that there are a lot of family-friendly shows. It feels like with each year we pick up a few more things that are family-friendly. So you can go online to indiefringe.org and kind of look around, choose your parameters, and look around to see what fits your schedule and your needs. And don't forget to check out the multiplicity of arts. I mean, it's not just theater, but it's song, dance, poetry, recitation, performance art that's a little bit hard to define, visual art. It's all across the board.
I know that one I'm really excited about checking out, Sharon, is called the Cabaret Absinthe. It's a theater of Grand Guignol, which I actually used to study a little bit in college, and it's just
really?
Like totally disgusting gothic French horror theater, as bloody and disgusting and weird as it can get on stage. So I can't wait to see what this group does with that.
You're deeply twisted.
Yeah, that's probably not one for the whole family.
Okay.
But the other one that also, I just love the title of one that I did want to mention too, is Screw You, I'm Nancy Drew. And it's about Nancy Drew coming sort of to life and taking over the book series in her own interesting way. Should be a lot of fun. Fringe
is
always great.
The sequel with the Hardy Boys will be up next year, I'm just sure of it.
Yeah.
So indiefringe.org for more information.
So many great shows.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of festivals, we're getting about as soon as Indie Fringe is over, Indie Jazz Fest, you get a little bit of a breathing moment or two to collect your thoughts, and then it's right into Indie Jazz Fest, September 10th through the 16th. Well, actually, you get to collect your thoughts, go to the Greek Fest and Penrod, and then Indie Jazz Fest, but you might want to go ahead and make your plans now. You can find out more at IndieJazzFest.net, and you'll have some insider picks for Indie Jazz Fest at an Art of the Matter interview coming up soon.
Very good. Hey, speaking of fests, the Indie Irish Fest is coming up September 14th through 16th. Why am I talking about it now? Because they need volunteers. It's the 17th annual Indie Irish Fest, and it is a terrific festival with great food and drink and music and fun and arts and crafts and culture, and volunteering for it is one of the most enjoyable things you can do. And if you go to IndieIrishFest.com online, you can find out about volunteering.
Excellent. Hey, if you're a piano artist, by which I do not mean pianist, I mean a visual artist who would like to use your piano,
I've heard about this.
As the raw material.
Using a piano for canvas?
Yes.
Yeah, this sounds pretty dangerous to me.
Yes, the grand piano is going to be used as the canvas, and then the upright piano parts will be used to be affixed to the grand piano in whatever way the artist's little heart so desires.
Wow, okay.
Yes, American Pianist Association is looking for RFPs. Now, they are looking for experienced artists from mm-hmm. Indiana. So okay. If you're just thinking, oh, it'd be fun to hack apart a piano, and you're not an experienced artist, do them a favor and don't contact them. But you can find out more at the American Pianists Association website. The deadline for RFPs is August 31st.
And this is going to be for public outdoor art piano.
It so will indeed.
Probably won't be that performable, playable anymore. But anyway.
Okay. I'm thinking not even if it's a John Cage prepared piano piece.
Nice.
Finalists will have until March 7th to complete their pieces, and then the completed artworks will be displayed in April 2013. So stay tuned for much more about that. What a fun and crazy project that is.
That's going to be very cool. Mm-hmm. So again, the deadline for RFPs.
August 31st.
End of the month. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. Hey, Cultural Cannibals is once again presenting their Bollywood Bhangra this year as part of Indian Independence Day. It's their Indian Independence Day edition at the Jazz Kitchen on the 18th. Definitely worth checking out. This is really fun. It's Bollywood and Bhangra and dance music and hip-hop, and DJ Kyle Long's going to be spinning, and it should just be kind of a crazy night, sort of Slumdog Millionaire meets Jazz Kitchen Indianapolis style. Something like that. Starting at 10:30 on Saturday, the 18th.
Great description. And now for something completely different. One of my favorite events is celebrating its first decade. Well, its first decade in its reimagined, reincarnated iteration.
Oh, enlighten me, Sharon.
Oh, that was terrible. I can't hold a match to you. Feast of Lanterns. How did you know? How did you know?
You love this event.
I love this event. I love it because it draws a nice cross-section of people, and it's so beautiful. Feast of Lanterns is this Saturday night at Spades Park. There are food trucks, food booths, an entertainment stage, very family-friendly event, and there's a nice playground in Spades Park, but there are specific entertainers, magicians and clowns and jugglers and so forth. And at dusk, children of all ages, including us, Travis, are allowed to participate in a parade leading to the lighting of hundreds of colorful lanterns hung throughout the park, glowing in the night and creating a beautiful and unique festive atmosphere according to their materials. And I have to say, that's true. So Feast of Lanterns this Saturday night, dusk until later dusk.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you are a writer and have always wanted to take that class on getting your novel started, well, Dan Barden, who's a terrific author, is going to be teaching again at Butler University, his community fiction workshop, and it is starting in September, and it's going to be on Tuesday nights for 12 weeks, and there's lots of information about how you can be a part of it and what the costs are and all that stuff, but you need to talk to Dan directly because he is signing up people now. So if you're an author and interested in participating in this great fiction writing workshop, give Dan Barden a call at 940-9688. Again, 940-9688 for Dan Barden.
Excellent. If you're hearing us on Friday night, pay attention. If you're hearing us on Saturday night, it's too late. But if you're hearing us on Friday night and you are a robot or a robot wannabe, I know, right? Pausing while people think that through. Are you a robot or a robot wannabe?
One or the other.
You are invited to by the Fountain Square Arts Council to come to Southeast Community Services Center. That's at 901 Shelby in Fountain Square from noon to 3 this Saturday. That's August 18th. What you're doing is getting geared up for Art Squared and the Art Parade through a robot building workshop. The focus is on those aged 3 to 12 who will get to start work on a robot costume to wear in the Art Parade, which is coming up on September 22nd. Materials and snacks will be provided. Bring your own gears. More information at discoverfountainsquare.com.
Of course. You must bring your own gears.
Right.
Hey, something fun to plan for next weekend. If you want to take a little trip out to Rushville at their Riverside Park Amphitheater, they are having an Innocent Band. It's a tribute to Billy Joel, and it's featuring special guests Rob Dixon and Trilogy. And so this is actually an Indie Jazz Fest affiliated event. It's taking place on Saturday the 25th at 7 p.m. And again, this is going to be in Rushville. It's part of their summer concert series. It's the final concert, and again, it's a cool tie-in with Jazz Fest, and the Riverside Park Amphitheater is located at 100 West Water Street. The event is free and open to the general public. Again, 7 p.m. next Saturday night. Should be a great concert.
Fun.
Worth making the trip for.
Hey, if it's been a hard day's night, you might want to twist and shout and maybe ride a yellow submarine until the sun comes back.
Oh, Sharon.
I'm sorry, too many Beatles songs in one sentence, right? But not too many for you to not go out to Symphony on the Prairie this Friday and Saturday night. Help! I need somebody to rescue me from this calendar item. Yipes! It's the Classical Mystery Tour, a tribute to the Beatles. I mean, you just need a tribute to the Beatles to celebrate summer, I'm just saying. You can call the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra at 639-4300 for more information.
And that is a great place to wrap up that calendar for this week that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
It's time for the Hoosier Salon in a new location. The exhibition has moved to a new home at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center. Sharon Gamble invited the Hoosier Salon's executive director, Donna Dole, in to learn more.
So as we're having this conversation, you've been hanging the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Such a glamorous job it is being the executive director.
Oh, yes, it is, especially when you're the only full-time employee in the whole state.
Yikes. Hey, so remind us, how did the Hoosier Salon get started?
88 years ago, a group of ladies called the Daughters of Indiana decided that Indiana artists, especially the Hoosier group and those down in Brown County, were not getting the national recognition that they so deserved. And so they decided to have what they referred to as the Hoosier Salon annual exhibition. And that's how the organization started. It literally was a 2 to 3 week exhibition that took place in Marshall Field's galleries in Chicago. And that went on for about 10, 15 years, and in 1938, 39, William H. Block approached a sorority from Indianapolis that was involved with them, the Woman's Department Club, and they decided to move the exhibit to Indianapolis and the organization, which has been the best thing that's ever happened, I think. And so that began literally 1940 was the first exhibit to be held in Indianapolis to start with. The Chicago exhibit actually was divided after the exhibit closed, would be divided into smaller exhibits. And it toured around the state because part of our mission is educational outreach, because our mission is to create an appreciation for visual art by promoting Indiana artists and their art. And part of that is educational outreach, you know, to educate people on Indiana artists, the different types of art, which include sculptures and ceramics and glass and two-dimensional, three-dimensional oil paintings, watercolors, pastels, on and on and on.
I know you're far too young to have been there, but tell me about, was the idea of making the first, the early exhibits in Chicago, it wasn't about dissing Indiana. It was
absolutely
more
not
about getting it was a bigger audience.
Exactly. It was because Chicago at the time was much more metropolitan than Indianapolis was. And they really felt like the national art market would more recognize the importance if the exhibit was in Chicago. But once they developed a following, you know, it was a natural for them to move to Indianapolis. And, you know, we established a gallery in Indy. There was a gallery at the State Life Building. We had an office there. And then, you know, over the course of years, we've always had a gallery in the Indianapolis area since 1940. The gallery that is open now is in Broad Ripple. It's 714 East 65th Street, right just north of the main street in Broad Ripple. And
stone's throw from the Monon.
Exactly, exactly. And then we have our next gallery to open was in New Harmony, Indiana, and that's been 12, 13 years ago. And then 2.5 years ago, we opened a new gallery in Wabash, Indiana. And so with the three galleries.
Is that in the Charlie Creek Inn?
Yes,
yeah.
It is. Okay. It is. It's wonderful.
Great setting.
Yes, it really is. And the town of Wabash is just amazing. I've spent quite a bit of time there in the last few weeks. So
so in the early days, was it just the Hoosier group that was highlighted? And when?
No, absolutely not. In our Grand Traditions book, which is, it looks like this tome of words, but it's actually fun reading because they go into detail about the different artists, the society that was hosting everything, the high society, and describing like the first exhibit, everybody in their velvets, because this was like early in the year. I think the first exhibit took place in January or February in Chicago. But pulling up in front of Marshall Fields in their, you know, their fine buggies and their velvet and top hats. But there were illustrators, Johnny Gruhl, who illustrated a lot of the Riley books.
And best known for Raggedy Ann.
Well, that's right, Raggedy Ann.
In his more populist,
that's exactly right.
With his more populist hat on.
But just a number. I mean, cartoonists, illustrations. The cartoonist that did Abe. Abe Martin.
Yeah.
That was in the Indianapolis Star. Mm-hmm. He was in the first exhibit. And just, you know, but along with the likes of T.C. Steele and Wayman Adams and Forsyth, and it was a cross-section. They had sculpture, they had drawings, they had paintings, they, you know, it was just, it represented Indiana art at its finest, and it still does.
And early on, I'm guessing the Daughters of Indiana were in part trying to just get the state as well as its art better known.
Exactly.
Do you feel like that's still a little bit of an issue? It shouldn't be nearly 100 years later, but maybe it is, that sometimes we're just a flyover state and people don't think about mm-hmm. serious art here, mm-hmm. and they should?
A little bit, but I will tell you, you know, we have close to 1,000 artist members now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's incredible.
How now, do people become members?
They have to have lived in Indiana for at least a year of their life, and artist membership is $40, and they just need to fill out an application and send it in. The key for the artist to hang in all of our galleries is to be juried into an annual exhibition. Once that happens, then they're free to bring artwork on consignment. We pay a lucrative percentage to our artists, 66.7%, and we keep only 33.3% for operating. But, you know, with the three galleries, we have close to 30 exhibitions a year, exhibits
wow.
that open up, about 10 per gallery. And then the big exhibition. So there's lots of opportunity for artists out there. And, you know, this year we have ceramics, we have porcelain, we have metal sculptures, we have, as I said, ceramic sculptures, we have just all sorts of things, you know.
What's the most unusual medium?
I think one of our artists, Claire Hollett, does this extremely thin, I mean, you can almost see through it, porcelain in these really unusual shapes and just different sizes. And one of her pieces is called The Native Prayer. And it's the most gorgeous, simplistic piece of porcelain, small, probably the size of a teacup. But it's gorgeous, Sharon. It's just, it's absolutely amazing. We've had, you know, we've got one piece now. It's called 40 Years in a Gold Watch, and it looks like it's a bronze, a very thin bronze sculpture of this man sitting in a chair, and it's like he's falling apart. He's given 40 years to this company, and all he got to show for it was a gold watch.
Wow.
And it's just so moving, you know. But we've got some absolutely fabulous oil paintings and pastels and watercolors. And, yeah, just this exhibit this year is, my designer said, this is the most dramatic exhibit we've had in a long time. So it's really, really, I love it. And, you know, as you know, we're in a totally different place, which is really cool, I think. We lost our contract with the State Museum as of the 2011 exhibit, and we searched for a new venue, and I called John Herbst, the president of the History Center, and said, what would you think? And he said, I would love it. So we've been working on it since before Thanksgiving last year, and I think the patrons who come to see the exhibit will be impressed. It takes up the entire fourth floor Lanham Gallery, and then they emptied out their boardroom, And our largest supporter this year is Hamilton Exhibits, and they donated walls. So we turned the boardroom into a gallery, and it's amazing. It's totally transformed. We have 117 pieces, 98 two-dimensional pieces, and then the balance are sculptures. Every type of medium that you would ever want to see, and it's gorgeous.
Are there any? Are there ever pieces that are not for sale in
no,
the big exhibit? They're
no.
all for sale.
And actually, in each of our galleries, we, you know, we've had artists bring us pieces. I don't want to sell that. And I said, then, you know, I
you
really,
can't be in.
I had unless you're going to take commissions from it. This is a showpiece. Then, I won't take it, because it's our livelihood.
Right.
I mean, you know, we can't exist. We're totally supported by grants, memberships, and contributions, and our retail side. And our retail side is becoming more and more and more important. So we're making a lot of changes in that area.
That's encouraging, because it means more people are collecting.
Exactly. Our sales the first quarter of the year were 67% higher than they were the first quarter of last year.
Does this mean the economy's finally recovering?
I hope so. I hope so, as do a lot of other folks out there, I'm sure.
Sharon Gamble with the Hoosier Salon's Executive Director, Donna Dole. This year's exhibit has an unusually high number of first-time exhibitors. You can see the exhibition at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center through September 8th. Learn more at HoosierSalon.org. Again, HoosierSalon.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for an all-food show. I'll kick it off with a preview of this year's Dig In event.
And then I get to sample some treats from the upcoming Greek Fest.
Opa! And for dessert, I'll try the new Food for Thought book. And we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.